Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Big Thing. So excited that you're joining me here today. I'm pumped for today's episode, man. I got my buddy Steve Zaragoza on. I haven't had an opportunity to talk to him. And I'm sorry, I have to apologize. We already probably did around 5 minutes of the show that you'll never hear because it's out in the world because we just started having conversations and we did that thing that most people do. Let's say, save it for the show. Save it for the show. I can't wait to talk to Steve. I've known Steve for a while. We always run into each other when we do. It's like it's one of those friendships that when you see somebody, do you talk to them all the time? No, maybe not as much as you want to, right? But when you do, you can't stop talking to each other. We'll run into each other somewhere and we'll geek out, whatever the hell it might be. It could be Star Wars. It could be whatever. We just talked about how incapable we are, except anything, putting our stupid faces on camera and talking into microphones. We're talking about a lot of that today. I want to see what he's up to, man. This guy's super funny, super talented, and to just bullshit. We could be, like, as I mentioned, I don't know if he gives a shit about the Batman. I don't know if he cares about, if he liked Spider-Man. I don't know what TV shows he's watching, but he's somebody I want to know all that stuff about. So that's what we're going to do. So if you haven't done that already, you should subscribe to this channel. It's a brand new channel. You guys know that I've only been around for like 4 or 5 months now. We're doing pretty good, and it's because you guys are subscribing. You're hitting the subscribe button. You are hitting the notification button. That is what is helpful. That is what keeps us going. And to subscribe on either Apple Podcasts, follow us on Spotify. We're getting bigger on Spotify, and that's because you guys keep on doing that, whether you watch it on YouTube's or not. All right, enough with me. Steve Zaragoza coming in hot, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Big Thing. What's up, everybody? Welcome back. It's the Big Thing. Another digital show. Yay. Well, I'm excited today because I get to talk to my pal Steve, and I'm going to stop talking about Steve, and I'm just going to bring Steve in. So there he is. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Steve Zaragoza. Oh, wait. Who's he talking to? Wait.
Hang on. I got to do this stupid show. Oh. Hey, what's up, man? Hey.
It's not very nice, Steve.
I know. It was such a nice intro. You were so nice. And then I was like, what's a funny thing I can do when I come in here? That
sure. Don't worry. I'll insult you enough by the time the show is over.
But yeah, no.
It's a pleasure to have you, man. We haven't talked in a bit.
Yeah, man. And you know, it's so funny because everything, first of all, thank you for having me. And I you know, we've been friends for quite a while. And you know, we've like worked together. We've like done all sorts of stuff together. And, you know, we just have never been able to kind of just like sit
and bullshit
and just bullshit. Yeah. Yeah. Cause what we do.
Do you know the last time I can tell you the last time we did that? I want to see if you can guess. And it's actually probably the first time I met you. Can you guess?
Was there some kind of like schmodown?
I mean, there was definitely a schmodown, but I don't think that was it. I know that that wasn't where I met you. I can tell you where I met you.
Okay. Where did you meet me? Remind me.
I did a Star Wars show before I did Jedi Council. I did a Star Wars show called Far, Far Away, and Tiffany Smith introduced
them. I was just going to mention Tiffany Smith, yeah. Name drop. Yes.
Name drop.
And yeah, and we got to talk about Star Wars.
We did. We were just talking Star Wars. That was before everybody and their mother did a Star Wars podcast. I did Far, Far Away, kind of turned into Jedi Council, but as I said, I'm part of the mothership now because I also do another Star Wars show. But this one, I have kind of gone back to the roots of Far, Far Away, where it's very similar to this, where it's just it's less of that panel show. And you've been part of the panel show.
So
it's less of the panel show. And it's more about, I think, because you're one of the YouTube guys, man. You're one of the ones that really were part of this thing to watch the explosion happen. And I think, tell me if I'm wrong here. I feel that what happened was, when Mark and I got into doing Schmoes Know in 2008, it was all about the YouTuber and the connection with the audience and to the camera conversation. And then something happened in that sphere from like 2013 to like 2018, where the Nerdists and the IGNs and the Colliders and the Screen Junkies, the corporate side of it started to get into it, and it got popular for a bit. And then the audience just said, nah, we want to see you guys talking to the camera again. And then that happened to explode. Do you feel the same?
Yeah. It's been really hard to kind of like pinpoint a lot of where things changed. But it's so funny that you mentioned 2013, 2014, because it's right around then when studios and big companies started to take notice of the momentum of the YouTube world. Yep. And how there was like some big money there. And yep, it took a little while for people to kind of see that. And then studios and stuff started throwing money at YouTube channels and stuff. And then that's when kind of you saw a big explosion of a lot of different content.
Yeah, Disney bought Maker back in the day, you know.
That was so huge. Remember that?
Massive. That was a big thing. And
yeah,
all that stuff was going down, and it was like all the people that had got in early enough were like making money and really figuring it out. And then like the pioneers.
Yeah, and it felt like, okay, so there's just this really easy formula you have to follow. And as long as you have like a little bit of a personality, you could make this thing work. And that's what a lot of that stuff relied on for a long time.
It's like crypto.
Yeah, it is like crypto. Isn't it funny how all these trends kind of come and go and you're like, well, I could have seen this shit coming.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone's just like, man, I shoulda, coulda, woulda. Everyone's got their like uncle who had a crypto wallet full of,
it's always the crazy uncle until the crazy uncle becomes your crazy uncle. Because that was,
right.
I was the crazy uncle around when I was, because remember Mark and I were just around the stand-up. I started at the Comedy Store. That was my place. And that's how I met Mark. And we were doing YouTube reviews. And I remember it was almost like to my wife's friends, my girlfriend at the time, I was like the alcoholic boyfriend. It was like, oh, is he okay? Is he doing YouTube videos? Is he going to be all right? He was working at a studio and now he's doing
him and his buddy.
Serious.
Dude, it was the same exact wording for me and my friends and family, because I worked at Sony Pictures for like 5 years doing like sound design work, and then I worked in their video team and shit, and I really lucked into that job, and it was nice, and I had like, you know, health insurance and a 401k, whatever that was at the time. And I had all this like nice cushy shit. And then this YouTube opportunity came along. And at that point I had been so done with like the corporate environment. And I was bursting at the seams with like comedy juice and like entertainer juice.
Sure.
And everyone was like, what the hell are you doing behind a desk in a cubicle? You need to go be an energetic bastard on screen somewhere. Yeah. And then I took a YouTube job and all of my friends were like, dude, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like, you're leaving this like good job, this good corporate studio job to go be a goofball on a YouTube?
Oh, dude, it was the same. I worked for when I was working at Warner Brothers, working for Joel Silver at the time.
And, damn.
But remember that the thing that was even crazier then is right now, you know the business well enough too, that it's, if a production company gets like one movie off the ground a year, that's a good thing. Usually it could be, hopefully within 1 or 2 years, they get one or maybe two movies off the ground, right?
Right. And totally.
Not in the development side. Silver was doing Dark Castle and Silver Pictures at the same time. Plus the bullshit that they had, whatever. And that, and so there were probably anywhere between 3 to 5 movies that could come out in a year for Silver, right? With Dark Castle.
Of course.
And yeah. I was getting piss money. I was getting like maybe $550 a week.
But right? Weren't you like loving just being there? You were I don't give a shit how much you pay me.
No, not at all.
Oh, no, you weren't.
I was miserable. And
but why did you do it?
Yeah, I'll tell you for two reasons. The one reason was that it was exactly what you're saying. The connections that I still have to this day, the people that I met, the understanding of the business in general was like going to school. So,
dude.
In hindsight,
big time.
Yeah, in hindsight. But during, remember, making five or $550 working for two dudes who were busy, like they were so cheap at the company, not the two dudes, but the business themselves, the Joel and the money, paying $550 for two. I was assistant for two guys at a heavy level rate. Like they all had movies coming in, rates, things I had to deal with. So I got to a point where I was like, look, I'm going to leave. I got to split to like one dude. And I started working with my buddy, David Gambino, who I'm still friends with, Roundup, running Robert Downey Jr.'s company, right? This guy.
But holy shit. Tight.
Susan Downey was ran the whole thing. Who's Robert's wife. Like it was a great experience in hindsight because of the stuff. And I met good friends, but yeah, dude, it was.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I could say a lot of terrible things about the corporate experience, the studio system experience, yes. But I choose to kind of hang on to all that good stuff instead.
Better man than me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because that's the thing. It's like, you know, you worked your ass off to fill someone else's pocketbook.
Right.
And you really were like a helpful person, probably. And you probably did great work. Like, you know, I need to see how far away I am from certain NDAs. But, you know, there's a lot of places where you put your heart and soul into it and you feel like it's for nothing. But that's what you're like. 20s are for, you know, your 20s and early 30s. Right. Once you're past your 30s, you know, the hope is that you're not doing that anymore. You're like somewhere a little bit healthier.
You get to that cliff, that of the cliff with the safe jump. It's like, should I do the jump, which ultimately for us turned out to be a safe jump. But you don't know that at the time.
It's a big risk. Yeah. Everyone, you're right. That jump is a big moment for a lot of people. It's like, right. You know, I mean, some of you listening might even be at that point where you're like, man, I'm at a fork in the road in my life. And I'm like, is this a decision that's going to ruin my life or help my life? And nobody knows and nobody can help you. Yep. And it's literally on you and no one else to make the decision. And it's fucking terrifying. And everyone's scared when they do it. And it just so happens that sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But I'll tell you this, Christian, and I'll tell you this, listeners, whoever's listening to this right now, mom, it's worth it. It's worth it to take the plunge, even if it doesn't work out.
100%.
Because what's the alternative? You're stuck in the little rat wheel, little hamster wheel.
Look, you got to tell you also, I'm still taking jumps. You know, I'm still taking jumps. And like I, as I mentioned in the beginning of this, I've been telling people that are new to it. I started this channel, this one that we're on right now, like about 4 or 5 months ago. Right. And as I was telling some people, and you know, Steve, you've been through this journey many times. Like Mark Ellis and I, when we started Schmoes in a different landscape in YouTube at the time, it took us around 2 to 3 years to get to around 25,000 subscribers, right?
Sure.
We have reached 33,000 in this channel in 4 months. And that's
from nothing, right? Like that's from nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a huge deal, man. That's huge. Because most people work forever and ever and never get there. And but you guys never gave up. And that was part of the...
But it goes into your what you were just telling people. You got it. It's a matter of taking a jump. And sometimes, and I can tell you from personal experience, that jump is not always easy because the first jump, if we're talking about like when you and I are working for Studio Systems, saying to our friends and family, I'm going to do this. Easier to do for me anyway, because at the time I was just going up. And another reason why it was more of a hard experience because I would work at Silver I would go in around like 8:39 in the morning, get off around 7 p.m. and drive to the Comedy Store, drive to those places and then not get to bed.
The old Hollywood hustle.
I'm in my 20s at the time, right? I don't have two kids. I'm not married. So like, it's easier for me to go, well, who cares what I do? I can do whatever the hell I want to do. As opposed to now, if I tell my wife, you know, I'm going to quit my job and just do stand up full time. She's like, who? Who's doing
there's another human here that will be at the receiving end of that decision, not just dog. You.
And how's the dog going to eat when you're telling Yuck has a hot dog club?
Right. Yeah. But I've never regretted, like, you know, and you could regret a lot of decisions in your life, whatever. It's normal to have regrets or whatever. Everybody's got regrets or whatever. But, you know, the big giant leaps we're talking about, you know, it's best to just find the good stuff that came out of those jumps, even if it wasn't, because you can't otherwise, again, you're just living in that gloom and doom and it's helpful to just, so for me, it's like every jump I've made, whether it was a bad decision or not, at the end of the day, I still don't regret it because those jumps are like big growing moments for you that everybody needs.
Right.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're just this stagnant little cartoon character that's like never changes. And that's not good.
It's true, you know, but I do want to ask you, though, when you were working at the studio, you decided, hey, I'm going to get the hell out of here. I'm going to do my own thing. People are telling you, you got to get your ass on camera. And then you wind up, like you said, working for YouTube. Now, how did you get involved with SourceFed, Phil, all those guys? Was that something that happened from the beginning, or did it start at a different place and then jump to, you know, then eventually lead to that? How did that all come to be?
So while I was at Sony, I was like, I mean, I've always been like a goofy boy making jokes and being a weirdo and a loud, obnoxious, weird person.
That's why we get along.
Exactly. I know. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I would just hear from my coworkers that and even before the Sony job, like I worked a lot of retail jobs and shit like that. And people are like, what the hell are you doing here? You got to be on TV. You got all these funny opinions and shit. And you make people laugh and you make people comfortable. And that's like a crazy combination that you should be utilizing in the entertainment world. And I've always wanted to do entertainment shit. So even working at the studio in a non-entertainer position, but in still like working in the system and feeling like you were a part of the system, right. I felt like I was as close as I was gonna get. So I was like taking what I could get at the time, and also not feeling super confident about doing anything that other than that, because you know, I didn't go to college, I didn't graduate high school, like I dropped out of all of this shit. I'm just kind of like a big weird loser that somehow managed to like squeeze his way into the studio system.
That's the thing. Hold that thought. But it shows you the power of words.
Totally.
You're a phenomenal talker, and you're really good in the room. You got that personality. It doesn't surprise me, and I'm sure that's what did it for you,
dude. Being good in the room, and thank you first of all. And I've learned to kind of accept that part of myself, and then you know, and that's a helpful thing too when you see your strengths, and then accept when people are telling you what your strengths are, and it aligns with what your strengths are, and then you accept it. It's all good, healthy stuff that everybody should, you know, get to at some point. Hey, try out confidence for a change, people out there. Why don't you try on that confidence hat?
Amazing,
and see what it feels like for a second. It's real nice.
Funny, yeah, it's nice.
But the energy in the room is so important, and you know. Christian and I, as when you said in the beginning of the show, you were like, every time we bump into each other, we end up kind of just rambling on about all this different shit and nerd out about all this shit. And so this is really going to be tangential and jump around. But when you said energy in the room, that's such a funny, important thing about the industry that people don't really talk about, you know, because there's charisma. You can think about an actor like Will Smith, who apparently has this golden charisma that and because he is just this very charismatic person, and that's so important in the room, because people are like, oh, that charisma is going to translate to a good work, a good actor or a good comedian or whatever. And so, you know, this is so tangential. But it's about Star Wars kind of, because inevitably we're always going to get to Star Wars. Yep. As our humble begin, our meet cute was a Star Wars thing, so we might as well swim in the Star Wars pool. I remember watching the prequels semi-recently and having a very strong opinion about them, and especially Hayden Christensen, who is a divisive person in the Star Wars zeitgeist, if you will.
I think used to be.
Okay, so yeah, totally used to be. But for me, I don't know if I've ever lost it, because I didn't really. So I had to kind of like stop doing like movie stuff and movie opinion stuff. Like, I'm trying. I miss it because I love it so much. But anytime I would talk about movie shit, I would piss off so many fucking people. And you know this. Yeah.
Like the last,
you know this.
The Last Jedi, you might as well have said, well, how do you know they stormed the Capitol?
Yeah, it's such a hot button. But I remember I was talking to some friends, and I was like, why the fuck did they choose Hayden Christensen to be Anakin?
Yeah.
Like, why? Of all the actors in all the world. And we got some heavy fucking hitters in the early 2000s.
What's the Leo first?
I mean, come on, dude. Like, imagine Leonardo DiCaprio I mean, being directed by George Lucas, which would be
I mean, George, but look, Harrison Ford did it. But this is what I'm going to say about Hayden Christensen.
Tell me what you're going to say about Hayden Christensen, and then I'll tell you how it pertains to this.
Tell me that first.
Well, no, because like very quickly, I just pressed the question, why Hayden Christensen? Yeah. And a friend of mine who works in the industry and has worked with some of these folks in the Disney world and in the Star Wars world.
It was Hayden Christensen.
He said the rumor is that Hayden Christensen blew everyone the fuck away in the room. I don't know if you've heard this or knew this, but I heard
that he had a rhinoceros penis. That's what I heard.
So this might be some like exclusive insider goss, but he had a huge penis and that's what it was. No, but I've heard from people who were like, who might know that apparently the word is that he blew everyone away in the room and he lit up the room and was this charismatic person in the room. And he just commanded the room. And that's such an important thing. Yeah. And if that happens and you get that on tape, and you show that to executives and everybody, everyone's going to feel that shit and go like, absolutely, you chose the right guy. But then the second they're on screen, it's like, uh-oh.
See, I think what you just said there is actually going to further my point that I was going to make. So okay. I heard that part of it. Because what you have to understand, and what is fair to us as viewers, is that what we see is what is put on screen. That's what we see. So the interpretation that you get out of Hayden Christensen's performance is rightfully, in your opinion, to say, well, that's what I saw, and here's my opinion on it. I think there's 1,000 other guys they could have got that would have done better than that.
Yeah.
You stand. But the other side of that is what we don't always look at, that we've heard about. George Lucas is notorious, terrible with actors.
Yes.
Terrible actor. So it's basically, what do I do now, George? I just stand there and do what you got to do.
Just read what's on the page.
He doesn't give a shit. All he wanted to do at that point was you say the lines, I'm going to make it look cool. I'm going to make it look like there's a ton of robots and droids behind you. And that's all we got to do. Meanwhile, here's this kid who blew away everybody in the room, who thinks he's going to come in and be able to do that. But instead, he's brand new to the process. He doesn't understand. And he's kind of like, when he does this sinister kind of creepy look to Padme in Attack of the Clones, he's like, yes, my lady. It's like someone needs to tell him, don't do that.
Doing George Lucas. He's doing George Lucas.
It's like George R. R. Martin is what he's doing.
You know what, though? Like, something tells me that George Lucas was writing all that romance shit and was like, this is so fucking good. But the truth is that it's like fan fiction. Like it's like, you know, because George Lucas is like kind of a nerd, right? Like he's a nerd. He's a nerd like we all are. He's just like wrote one of the greatest things ever and changed science fiction forever and fantasy forever.
Yeah.
And will always be in my. And let me just say this. I fucking love George Lucas. Yeah. I'll always love George Lucas. There was a time where I was upset with him for the decisions that he was making and the things that he was doing, the things that he did. Right. To those movies that meant so much to us, the special editions.
Yeah. No.
You know, exactly. All of that. We know everything. McClunky. Oh, like, he just hasn't stopped.
Even when he's retired, he's still making changes.
He's just like, look, one more thing. There's an email to Kathleen Kennedy. Look, I know the deal's done, but you gotta throw McClunky in there. I had a dream, but anyway, I love him so much. But I think that he shouldn't be writing romance, and I think it was really cringe when he wrote all that stuff. And I think I have a theory that Hayden Christensen was like playing it away in a way that probably really worked and wasn't cringy and weird.
Yeah,
and then Lucas was like, let's have dinner. And then they had dinner and he was like, here's how I want you to approach these scenes. And then he gave him his version of it.
He said nothing.
Yes.
Do whatever you want. And Hayden's like, how was that? And he's like, come on, go to the next
one. I want you to be creepier.
George Lucas, have you heard this portion of my interview with him? No, it's a pleasure to have you, sir. I'm obviously a massive fan of everything that you've done. I know you hear that quite often, but so thank you for joining the show first and foremost.
Try to get the hold on a second. I've lost some weight during quarantine.
You look good.
Whoa, that's impeccable.
Yeah, my wife Melody keeps me in shape. Well, listen, I heard you guys talking about these new shows. They're so great.
Wait, you had George Lucas on this show?
Listen, what he says, I know that you work very close with Dave Filoni, that he is somewhat of the heir apparent. The one person you were like you were like Yoda Dave to Filoni. Him, and I heard, and you can deny or not deny, that you're not a massive fan of the films, but the TV shows, that's more your speed.
Yeah, well, it really pays homage, as you said, pays tribute to the Joseph Campbell, mythological idea of the hero's journey, and the obviously, it has that lived-in world, has that look, and has that feel to it. Right. And there's some really hot, Twi'leks in there too.
All right. Okay. All right. I was waiting.
That's the great Josh Robert Thompson.
Great. That sounds just fucking like him.
He does George. He did a thing where, because did you know that Morgan Freeman was up for Mace Windu at one point?
I feel like I've heard that, yeah.
So he does a spot on Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman doing Mace Windu. Oh yeah,
it's incredible. So it was. Yeah. But I knew you'd get a kick out of that. But man, like I think that's where it comes down with Hayden Christensen, right? And he is a really talented actor, and I think that you're gonna see that in the Obi-Wan series.
I think you're right. I think you're right, because when you've seen him directed by other people, you're like, oh, he's good. He's really good. And look. This is where people were like, this is when on your show, people were like, this Steve guy was pretty good until this part.
this is the beauty of this show. This show so far, and just wait until we hit 50,000 subscribers. The people have been cordial thus far, and the conversation has been good, and it's been great. So please go ahead.
Because you like. You're a good guy, Christian, and you're you've worked in this industry for a while, and you've done this fandom stuff. You've done this nerd world stuff for a very long time, and you have worked to the point where you've curated an audience of mostly, at this point, probably respectful people.
Yeah.
Like, all the shitheads have fallen off to a point, right? Like, that's the thing they don't really tell you about when you build these audiences, especially when you build them around something so divisive as fandom, is that you really bring along everybody.
Right.
And if you do it long enough, you get to a point where you either piss people off so badly that they leave, or you piss them off so badly that they make it their life's work to make you feel like absolute shit forever.
It's true. Yeah, no.
But you can get to a point where you're like, you don't bother me. I don't give a fuck what you say. Do your own show, and then we'll talk. And then you get to a point where you're like, look, this is just my opinion, and I'm never going to change. And I think if you do that long enough, you the people who respect that stick around. And most of the time, those are people who are respectful of other people's opinions and understand that they're just opinions. Yeah, I think you've reached that point with your audience. Is that fair to say?
I think that it's fair to say, and as I mentioned to you, I do think that even though I'm very proud of the fact of where we've grown so far in 4 or 5 months, it's still in as you can attest to, it's a smaller portion of, once you get to a place of, let's say, 1 million subscribers, right? That's a lot of people. And what I always say is, remember this, that because of the internet, the best person that you've ever interacted with, that you would say, not someone in your family, right? But the best human being that you've ever met that's still in this world, right? They have access to the internet. Now, the worst person in the entire world that you have even met or not met has access to the internet. So what we the same way with that kind of that understanding of the people that you talk to, that you think that, oh, that's a decent human being, people that you would never associate with, because you go, that's a horrible human being. They could comment on your video and you think you're having a casual conversation with them, and they just want chaos. And there's also the other side. What I've gone on the other side of that, though, is to also realize I also haven't lived in that person's shoes. In the same way that I think that, look, yeah, I've gone through some shit in my life, I don't know if that person has gone through mental trauma. I don't know if that person has had a if I sat down with that person and they told me their life story, that at the end of that conversation, I would be like, fuck, I'd be a dick on the internet too after that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I wouldn't act like that. Yeah, but you don't know. And it's not an excuse to these people.
Right. Right? And isn't it interesting that there's also the ones that do that, and then you like reply to them in kind of like a respectful way with like a well thought out thing. And sometimes they respond going like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry I was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's all they wanted was just like,
And I think
they wanted to connect with someone, and that was the way they knew how to connect. Yep. Which isn't it's not a good thing, but you know, and it's not our job to curate a good conversation with someone, with every single person on the planet, but we're gonna do our best and be like, look, we're nerds, we love shit. You may love the prequels, I might not love the prequels, but we love Star Wars just the same at the end of the day. And if you can accept that and can hang with that, then you can come sit with us.
Yeah. You know what it was, though, Steve, too? I think that would happen in specifically with like Star Wars. And this is why I mentioned this before. The problem with, and it's not just Star Wars, it's fandoms in general. I think that what has happened over the course of the last 5-6 years, the problem is that, and I mentioned like something like the prequels, when that was 10, 15, 20 years ago, and you said you didn't like it, there was a conversation, well, why you didn't like it, blah, blah, blah. I don't like the prequels. I do like the prequels. And the conversation could get cordial, or you don't like this movie because, right? In the last 5 or 6 years, it really has gotten political in the way that if you like that movie, it's because you're following, and just this particular example, you're following the radical left, or oh, that's why everything, of course you like that movie because of the woke agenda and because of this and because of that. And then if you like, oh, you don't like that, you're not on, you don't like that movie, well, clearly it's because you have a racist point of view, you're this and this,
right, and or you're dumb, or you don't get it.
Yeah. You don't get it. And it's like, and it's these two conflicting, like, we're right, you're wrong, and the politics have crossed over into fandom. And it's like, yeah, it becomes tough because it's so, I mean, the political landscape is like, so I saw something recently, and you know, you hear a bunch of shit, but like America's the closest that it's ever become into going into a civil war, not in a way that back in, with people meeting on a field and battling, but in the scary kind of ways that you used to see in Ireland and shit like that. Right. And that's the kind of place that we're in right now that does transfer over to pop culture. People don't, it's different. It's not different. It all transfer over because those same people who are arguing about political stuff, they're watching movies, they're watching TV, and they think that the people making it are the bad guys, or the people who don't like it are the bad guys. And that's where those comments also come into play.
Oh, totally. And that's just a percentage of a percentage of a smaller percentage of a smaller percentage of a smaller percentage. And when you're talking about like an audience that you've curated based around pop culture, it is just only a small percentage of the large amount of people. So there's like, and then there's just everybody in between. There's the people that like are respectful and love it, that are great and engaging, and they feel like they're hanging out with their friends, which are the best of the best. And then there's the ones that are just like, you know, maybe a little creepy, and you make people uncomfortable, but they're doing their best, and we still accept them and love them.
Put it back in your pants. And we said no.
I recently observed that there are people who, do you remember the weird kid in the public pool?
I mean, from personal history or
something? Yeah, from personal history. Yeah. Do you remember being in public?
There's always that weird kid. What, is he pissed in there? What's he doing?
Exactly. Okay, so my thing is that there are some adults who give off the weird kid in the pool vibe, and that transfers into adulthood, and there's those people in the fandom too, and so you just get. You get to a point. go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead. It is why I moved to California, though. I actually came out of here to be able to piss in the ocean.
Yeah, finally.
Everybody does. You always feel like you're getting away with something.
Yeah, the fish do it. Why can't I do it?
Oh, sure. The shark's taking a dump in there.
Absolutely. It's their toilet. We're just hanging out in their toilet. Yeah, yeah. But like with the fandom and things like that, it's like you know, we know where all that stuff is, and we've gotten to a point in our lives where we've chosen we pick our battles maybe a little bit more carefully when you get to a point where you've had all the conversations you can possibly have about the prequels, and yet we can still talk about them forever and ever. But anyway, we can move on. We can talk about other shit.
Yeah, but that was fun. I mean, I guess transitions into it. Have you been watching any of the Star Wars or Marvel shows? Are you?
Yeah. So where do you want to start? Because I watched all the Marvel shows, except I haven't watched Hawkeye.
I'm all right. So I'm not gonna be able to find out yet what I think that I'll give you my ranking of the shows.
And okay.
But that doesn't mean we'll be on the same page. My ranking of the shows for Marvel are Loki at number one. Number two, I got WandaVision. Number three, Falcon and Winter Soldier. And then four is Hawkeye. That being said, I did like Hawkeye. Just the tone for me, a lot of people, what they really liked about it does have that Christmas feel. They're trying to go for the Shane Black thing, which is fun. And it was, there's just a couple things that I found were a little goofy.
Okay.
Didn't play as much.
So I think we're similar. So I love Loki, man. Loki's definitely my favorite of the series, the Marvel series so far. I had so much fun with it, man. And I loved how bonkers it was. And I actually feel like, so WandaVision was awesome too, but is it weird that I liked Falcon and Winter Soldier more than WandaVision?
That's just tone. That's
have
just
you heard this opinion though?
Dude, you hear so many different opinions from what? because it's a matter of like why. And then I think that very similar, but not as dramatic maybe as for why certain people comment the way they do. Like this is why our opinions are always different. To be like, oh, you're wrong in your opinion. No, you're not, because I don't watch movies the same way you do.
Right. Steve. I'm not in your brain.
No, I don't. We didn't have the same life experiences of why certain things. Like I just, we're doing a rewatch series of Batman. Right. And I rewatched the 89 Batman, like, and I'm older than you are, but I had an opportunity to see Batman 89 in the theater. Right. And that was like a major event. So when I rewatched it again, it was very nostalgic for me, and certain memories came back up, and certain things of being, remember being in a comic book shop, like getting the
good old days
and just blending it in. And it added to the experience again, that you're not going to have that same experience watching that movie, you know?
And don't you think that helped you and in a way gave you a bit of a bias?
100%. And that's what I mean, is that I, where people now might see that movie and go, oh, it's a little dated, it has this, but yeah, but you don't know. I was around, I knew like the impact of what that movie did.
I think that's where the prequels are too. Yeah. I think the prequels are very, especially at this point, because those
have a new appreciation for the prequels.
See, a lot of people do. And for me, it's like, I have a new appreciation for the Phantom Menace.
Yeah. Okay.
Cause I remember seeing the Phantom Menace in like when it came out, I didn't stay overnight in front of the theater, but I was there very early in the morning and was in a big line with people. And then when we saw it, we had tickets for the next showing right after it. And I was like, what did I just see? I was so confused. I didn't love it. And then I watched it again and was like, oh no, why don't I love this? And then I struggled with that for the next 30 years. And then, or however many years later. And then, and so I've always kind of just disliked it. And then when the other ones came out, I felt like they were each worse than the one before it. And I was like really upset. And I got, I became a really jaded Star Wars nerd. But it been in the past like 5 years of my, what's that?
It happened to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, it really did. And a lot of people didn't come around, and I feel like I haven't really come around, but I came around on The Phantom Menace because after these new ones came out, which I also have probably different opinions on than a lot of people, but I enjoyed most of them.
I don't think so. I mean, I think I like them less and less.
As time goes on?
Yeah. Not to detract from your point, but the fact...
No, sure.
Because we did all these rewatches for those as well, leading up to like the series that are coming out. And I really liked The Force Awakens when I saw it in the theater. But when you watch it now, it's so disappointing knowing what comes next, because
because
everything that's set up. And The Last Jedi is very similar to what you were talking about with Phantom Menace. First time I saw it, I said, what the hell did I just watch?
Yeah.
I tried to convince myself that I really liked it. Even said, oh, yeah, this is a really good it's a good film. But to me, it gets worse and worse as a Star Wars film every time I watch it. And the Rise of Skywalker is just eating cotton candy until
you know what's interesting is like I agree with that. I agree with it, and I still have like a weird like distaste for Luke throwing the lightsaber over his shoulder, and yeah. and I still can't get over it, and I keep thinking like, man, but all I've ever wanted from Star Wars is for people to start taking like bigger chances,
yeah,
and taking us away from desert planets and yeah. And things like that. Right. But you know what? And I have so much to say about Boba Fett. I absolutely love it too. Yeah. But man, it's so crazy how he can't get the fuck away from Tatooine.
Right back there with Obi-Wan.
We're going right back. It's like, when is it end? I'm so sick of the desert planets. Like,
there's new parts of Tatooine. You can go to the bike shop if you want to get new speeders.
Get some candy red swoop bikes. Man, it's so funny because you've got a whole galaxy and beyond full of like any kind of planet you could possibly imagine. Like you look through Etsy or not Etsy. Well, sure, you could look through Etsy or like, you know, the latest art places where you can see where people's art is.
Yeah.
And you see like concept artists and you see like, you know, people who are like aspiring industry professionals that make like backgrounds and planets and creatures and things. Yeah. And you're like, there is an endless bag of incredible art out there. Yeah. And yet we keep seeing the same shit in sci-fi and fantasy and everything. Yeah. And it's like, all you got to do is do a search through any of the latest like artist profiles. And you're like, dude, why aren't these people making movies? It's so crazy.
Because the problem is it's what the audience has.
It's comfort. And yeah.
It's comfort, but it's also IP driven stuff. People get scared. And
totally.
It's the difference with the movie business and how the movie business and the TV
business.
I've shifted. I mean, hell, Mark Ellis and I started Schmoes No Movies, right? And I beat the drum now about how I think TV is way more of a satisfying narrative for overall story, and it's definitely for Star Wars, but for a lot of different things, because you get to take more time with the characters. You get to spend more time. And the point that I've been hammering down more is that as you and I are talking here about how the fandom kind of changed, got angry. One of the reasons, like if you look at, let's say the Force Awakens to The Last Jedi in that time period, when The Force Awakens came out, everybody was happy. It's a new movie. 3 years passed after that. There are some people who said it was a rehash, but for the most part, fan base is happy.
Mm-hmm.
3 years happened or 2 years happens. And then the next movie comes out. Or Rogue One had come around, you know, everybody's still happy, but 2 years, you got time to wait inside that happiness. And then Last Jedi comes out and people are pissed off. And now it's a battle for people who are pissed and people who are trying to defend it. Then Solo comes out and Solo eats shit. So now you have 2 years to sit in it before Rise of Skywalker comes out, as opposed to television. I didn't love this last episode of Boba Fett. I liked the show very much, but okay. I didn't like the third episode. I only got to wait a week.
And then you'll forget all about it.
What's Rancor and Danny Trejo going to do next? That's all I care.
Yeah, I want that series.
That's it. Danny Trejo and the Rancor. That's all I want.
You know what was kind of funny about that episode, though? Now that you mention it, I was like, man, okay, so you're going to give the Rancor. Like, I liked it, by the way. And we can talk about what we liked and didn't like about it if you want.
The whole episode or just
the whole damn thing. I love the whole thing. The whole thing. Okay. And the reason why is because I was like, sure, why the fuck not? We'll get our Lost Boys in there and we'll get them on shiny, colorful. We get Rufio. We got Wheels. We got the Burger King Kids Club.
100%.
Everyone's there and it's great. And I'm like, you know what? Who gives a fuck? Sure. Why the fuck not? We'll give Boba Fett his little Lost Boys team and why not? And it'll be great. And maybe they'll get their own spinoff. And that's another show I don't have to watch or could watch if I want to.
It's the beauty of having a subscription. You just say no.
Yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to. You don't have to do anything you don't want.
You don't need to cancel your subscription. You just go, I'm not watching this one.
No. But there was one moment in the episode which I thought was interesting. And I think it's, you know, there's a lot of fan service-y shit going on all the time.
All right.
And it's like, let's bring, sure. At this point, I'm like, if you can do it in a way that doesn't feel like it's forced, then I'm on board. Like the Rancor thing was really close.
Okay.
Cause I was like, In the episode before, they did that joke where they dropped the guy down into the Rancor pit, and then there wasn't a Rancor, and it was like, cool, man. And I'm like, Boba Fett is going to have this whole new way of running things. There doesn't have to be a Rancor. There doesn't have to be, you know, like a Bib Fortuna, even though I guess the robot kind of is, but the Matt Berry robot.
Right, right.
But you know, you don't need all the things Jabba had, and you don't need all this recognizable shit for us to understand that he's the new Jabba, and that's what the whole show is about so far. But, you know, then they bring the Rancor in, and you're like, all right, fine. I guess, sure, why not? Let's have a fucking Rancor. Like, I could have done, I didn't need a Rancor. I gotta be honest. I love the Rancor, big creature puppet, big Phil Tippett fan. Love the fucking Rancor so much. Like, trust me, dude, I fucking love Rancor. But we didn't need him.
Yeah,
we didn't need it.
Until, I want to see. I want to revisit you though, because when Boba Fett rides in on that motherfucker,
I know. Okay, but see, okay, but
syndicate.
Okay. Yeah, that's the point. So like, now that we have the Rancor, it's like, okay, sure, I'm on board. I don't give a fuck. They got real close to making me go like, all right, fine. Now what? Now we're gonna get a band in there, in the Jabba's palace, and then it's gonna be like Jabba's palace, like. Whatever. If that's what they do, then whatever. So now I'm on board with Rancor. But it was interesting how when they were down in like the pit and they had Danny Trejo down there, and they gave us that whole like, new canon for Rancors, I guess, because there was an old canon.
Yeah.
About Rancors and where they came from. And there's a lot of games. Wasn't there like a game where you go to Rancor Planet and you like.
I remember that in Knights of the Republic, you had to battle them at one point. You had to fight one or something.
Yeah. But anyway, there was all this old canon, and I don't know how much they're borrowing from it for this new one. But they're establishing this new thing that like Rancors are like are smarter and more emotional than we thought, and they have like feelings, and they're like big puppies now at this point. And I'm like, but you think he still wants to be locked up in a dungeon or
lock him in a dungeon? But I thought that. A little more sense to that Return of the Jedi scene where you understood why the trainer had much more of a connection with him, for sure.
Which I love, and I think that's great. And I love like instantly when Danny Trejo didn't leave after the Jabbas or the twins left.
Yes.
You're like, oh fuck, Trejo's the new Rancor keeper. That's so cool. And now we're gonna fucking Trejo be the Rancor keeper. And love it, on board. But I just thought it was so funny that they're trying to like. Make this emotional thing out of this Rancor, but it's like, but you're still like enslaving it. You're still in a cage.
You're still enslaving it.
No,
Boba Fett lets everybody go, so he'll probably let him go too.
I guess so.
You want to talk about, we both agree that Boba Fett has the worst security in the world.
Absolutely.
Taken asleep, and now somehow the Wookiee comes in like Ethan Hunt style. And
the biggest Wookiee that has ever existed.
My favorite is the audience. Like, well, you know, the Hutts knew the secret passageway. I'm like, 7 foot Wookiee bouncing around the castle. Guarding the back to tank the two pigs.
The most vulnerable place in the entire palace, the back to tank at night.
Walt hanging out when he's doing the bear hug.
I mean, you know, and you could from a fan perspective be like, but Boba Fett's a badass and they're not going to let anything bad happen to him. And he's like expecting danger at every moment. And honestly, like his whole Boba Fett's like entire life has probably been one eye open, sleeping with one eye open like forever. You know, he's like the master of that. So maybe at this point he's like, I don't give a fuck who sneaks up on me. I'm ready for a fight whenever it happens. For someone that's the new guy of Tatooine, it's like, get some fucking guards, bro.
Man, it's like, that's my favorite. It's like, oh, you're the charge of the family. Who's the family? You, the two pigs and the robot? We get the Power Rangers gang and we got a squad.
Right.
All right, let's try to move out of Star Wars. I know it's hard for us, but so the other thing is, all right, you're talking about the Marvel show. So you got Loki.
Loved Loki. Yeah. And then WandaVision was a really promising in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then I felt like it kind of became, I was like, man, they're doing some really unique stuff that they would never be able to do in the movies, probably.
And you think they fell into the Marvel trope at the end?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Loki didn't.
Yeah, Loki set the rules for everything. If you watch like No Way Home and all that, it set the rules.
Because, yeah, because eventually it was like, all right, we got our big battle. We got our big world's going to end shit. And we got our big. And it was like Loki did it too, but it like stuck with the unique weirdness of that world they created. Yeah. And with WandaVision, they like stepped outside of it. And then, and for me, and I get why like a lot of people probably liked that, but I wanted to kind of live in that weird TV world, yeah, and just kind of let that be the most of the meat of the show. But
I you know what it was? I understand the point. I think I really enjoyed the show, but I understand the point because the way that I compared that show for the first like three or four episodes, it has that lost feel, right? Like,
yes.
Where you don't
totally,
you don't know what's happening, who's in the hatch, what's like that type of thing. But Lost, even though some say maybe too long, got to play in that mystery box for at least like three or four seasons.
Mm-hmm. Right?
You deliver the, oh, well, that's what's happening in like the fifth episode of this. So it is condensed tremendously. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I didn't mind it because I looked at it like a bigger movie. There were some, and I actually liked the idea how they turned it. And I think that what Marvel had to do in their first one out is say, hey, yeah, this is different and this is crazy, but it's still Marvel. Check it out.
Yeah. I felt like Loki did the, hey, this is different, but it's still Marvel a little bit better.
I agree.
For me. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe it's the writing. Maybe it's the directing. I don't know. Maybe it's the
multiverse. Are you a multiverse parallel universe guy?
Absolutely. And by the way, I recently fell into a hole of the Mandela effect. Okay. Do you know about the Mandela effect?
Oh, tell me.
You got to know this. The Berenstain Bears thing.
Coy was talking about this recently. Refresh my memory.
There's this thing called the Mandela effect, and it's supposedly the idea that we are all experiencing something together, yeah, that's wrong, that's incorrect, okay, but we remember it right. But the proof is there's proof that we were wrong. For example, the Berenstain Bears are a cartoony bear family, storybooks. Everybody knows
87 books that I read to my daughter every night.
Exactly. And so so many of us remember that they were called the Berenstain Bears. Yeah. Not the Berenstain Bears, but if you look, it is Berenstain Bears, and it's like, okay, so maybe we were just always not pronouncing it correctly. But falling into this multiverse idea, I was reading about another one that kind of blew my mind. Do you remember Ed McMahon?
Of course. Hey.
Yeah. Hey, Ed McMahon. Yeah.
Hey now.
So Ed McMahon, when we were kids, did this Publisher's Clearinghouse thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where he would go door to door and give people big, yeah, giant checks.
Yes.
It turns out that is an incorrect thing. Ed McMahon was not involved in Publisher's Clearinghouse at all.
What was he doing?
Something else, but it wasn't Publisher's Clearinghouse. And also Stouffer's Stovetop Stuffing.
Yeah.
It's not Stouffer's is not the stuffing brand. Stouffer's does not make stovetop stuffing.
Okay, so that's what this meant. So that's us all.
So it's us all collectively remembering something in a certain way, yeah, and then looking for proof and finding out that we were wrong. Like the whole, like, you know, Shazam, that like people are saying that there was a genie movie with Sinbad, yeah, in it, and they remember seeing it. But there isn't a genie movie with Sinbad. That doesn't exist.
Really?
Really, dude.
I remember that too.
Dude, look it up. There is no genie movie with Sinbad. It doesn't exist. So I love the multiverse idea because to me, there are people that say the Mandela effect is another universe leaking into ours. And at some point, our universe became this other universe where there was Berenstain Bears and Ed McMahon wasn't involved in Publisher's Clearinghouse. And the Fruit of the Loom logo had a cornucopia.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. There's all this weird shit. It blows my mind. It keeps.
Well, I'll even blow your mind also because I was looking up stuff. I don't know. It's probably a year ago. And the pandemic, as it first started, you're going through crazy loopholes, right? You basically, I don't know if you've ever seen Dark City, but you're like,
oh yeah, man,
you're like that guy or you know, in scribbling on the walls. But like, yeah. So one of the things that I was looking up, when you die, do you go to, what is it, multiverses? Is it parallel universes? And there are people that swear that they were transferred over in their moment of death to a parallel universe. And there was this one guy who was driving, and he was driving and he saw a truck coming, and he just kind of snapped out of it, and he was fine. And it didn't happen. He just kind of like weird flash. But when he got back to his place, things were different. They were the same, but they were different. Like,
Berenstain bears.
Right. And it was like something along the lines of like, you know, there was a guy that he got along with very well who didn't like him anymore.
Wow.
All this stuff. And I was reading this whole thing.
Love it.
So that kind of stuff I love. And that's
love
why
it.
That's why Loki worked for me. Did you? I haven't watched. I did a poll on this channel of what people think I should watch. And one that was people who've seen it swear by is this show Dark. Have you seen this show?
Dude, holy shit.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Yes. I am so obsessed with Dark right now.
Is it great?
That's so crazy that you mentioned this because, yeah, I love it. I watched season one back when it dropped on Netflix way back when, maybe like 3 or 4 years ago or something. And I was like, this is maybe the coolest time travel thing I've seen in a really long time.
I watched this thing.
So and saying it's a time travel thing is maybe a little bit of a spoiler, but I can't think of another way to get people into this show because the title isn't very good. Dark. It's like, well, I don't really need dark shit right now. Right. And it just so happens that it is very dark. It's not a very happy show. Yeah. And it's not a very uplifting show.
The butterfly effect, that type of thing?
Yeah, more psychological and kind of a thriller vibes, but it's a hardcore drama.
Yeah.
But it's so fucking good, dude. It's so good. So season one, fantastic. And then season two came out and I was like, maybe I'm not gonna watch this because the first season was such a bummer. Yeah. And then recently I saw friends talking about it on Twitter, and another one of my friends was like really talking it up like it's one of the best series ever. So I was like, all right, so I am back in. I watched season two a couple weeks ago, and now I'm like in the middle of season three, which is the final, I think.
That's the final one. Yeah. So that's what, so the ones that I had up there that I put on the poll was Dark, Arcane, which have you watched that yet?
No. I've heard things though. It's the League of Legends show, right? Yeah, everyone's saying it's amazing.
Pretty great. I've watched two episodes so far. I don't know why I do these polls, Steve. I put the poll out and it was the second one on the list. Yeah, supposed to do it first. So it was, but that was number two. The first one was The Witcher, season one and season two.
Yeah, Witcher's good, man. I haven't watched season two yet, but I loved season one.
Okay, and then the other one was Dexter, the final season, which I was a big Dexter guy. Did you watch the final season?
No, but I was also kind of a big Dexter guy, and then I didn't care anymore, and I didn't see the last season proper.
Okay.
And then didn't really care. And then when it came back, I didn't really care. And I'm kind of, I don't think I'm going to go back there.
I started the first three episodes and I dug it.
I'm hearing things, but I don't, it's enough for to get me back.
I want to finish it because I also really love Clancy Brown. Clancy Brown's in it. And, nice. And it looks to go back to the roots, and something that might be able to sell you on it if you were a big Dexter fan. Mm-hmm. So the season that it started to go downhill for me was, and this is spoilers for anybody who hasn't watched Dexter. If you haven't watched Dexter before, I'm giving you a spoiler. I'll put it in the time code. You've been warned. Ready?
That's so kind of you, Christian.
I have to do that. So after Rita dies, the season kind of went to the series started to go downhill because he had no purpose anymore. As far as he was trying to balance both sides of it.
That's kind of early on, isn't it? Isn't that like season four?
It was season four. It was the end. Because that also happens to be one of the best seasons of television, even though it started going downhill. And one of the other reasons is because the showrunner left afterwards, didn't come back, but that showrunner came back for New Blood. And you can feel it. You can tell from what I so far. That's something if that happens to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so much, man. Like, I think coming back to Dark was a big deal for me and it has paid off. So I'm like, you know, I'm in it now, but I just don't know if I'm ever going back to Dexter. I'll see what happens when it's done, because, you know, we were just talking about how it's hard to watch the new Star Wars sequels.
Right.
Because you know where it ends. Yeah. And I felt the same way about Game of Thrones. Like, I'm probably never going to rewatch Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Were you really bummed by the last season?
I mean, I was just kind of like, you know, at this point in our lives, we've learned to accept that these shows are probably not going to end in a perfect way. Yeah. It's really rare when a series ends in a perfect way. And so I was kind of not expecting anything huge anyway, but I wasn't devastated by the end of Game of Thrones, but I was like, okay. I mean, clearly the show quality stopped being good when they were done with George R. R. Martin's source material. Once they went off on their own.
I think that was harder for them. I give Benioff
totally
credit, because I think there's a lot of stuff they did that was really good. And I think that it became more of a movie that you would write, like if you could make a Game of Thrones, like fan fiction almost, right?
Yes.
That you can do, because you don't have any more source material, like you said. That's why I didn't mind the last season. I understand fully that diehard fans of like the books are just like, what are we doing here? I get it.
Yeah.
I wasn't one of those people. So I was able to go, all right, that's an interest. I don't like that choice, but I didn't mind it.
Yeah. I guess it's just like, you can't please everybody, obviously. And just like we were saying, it's impossible kind of. So, So I was a little bummed out about that, but like in regards to Dexter, if someone's like, by the time it's all done,
yeah,
is like, oh, it's real good, then maybe I'll check it out. But if by the time it's all done, they're like, it wasn't really worth
over.
It. Then.
It's over. They just finished it up on Sunday. So I got three in, but I'm not, but there's other things. I want to finish Arcane. That's something I'm definitely going to get into and finish, because I'm really digging it. It's very interesting to me. And I think that I hope, from what I've seen, the way that, going back to what you said before, even though it's not necessarily a new IP, but it's a fresher IP for people that aren't I don't know enough about League of Legends. Right. So the idea of, if this show can be as popular that it eventually probably turn into a live action also, I know there's a lot of hardcore fans like, hey, you don't need to, the animation's perfect. And I get it, but it's bigger business when you're putting people in live action and those things. So I think,
yeah,
I like the world that they set up so far. I really like it. Two episodes in, and I'm so excited to watch the rest.
Yeah, basically anybody I've talked to who has seen it has said that it's very, very good, which is like a rare thing.
Yeah, it's fun, maybe not the best word, but it's a really interesting take on, and as far as how science fiction, if you have good, decent science fiction, you're going to get me on board.
Absolutely. And if it's high concept science fiction, ooh, baby, sign me up.
I think you'll dig it, Steve. I think you'll like it a lot.
I'll check it out.
So The Witcher's probably the next one that I have to go back and forth with. But now we're doing all these rewatches on Batman leading up to The Batman, which I guess is maybe our last topic on the show today. The Batman. Now, if you look at Spider-Man No Way Home, was that like you get these pockets, as you and I are in this business. You see these pockets of the big movies that, you know, oh, that's the one everyone's talking about right now. That's the big one, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the pandemic, there really weren't any. I mean, Black Widow had come out, did okay, did fine. Shang-Chi came out, did okay. But there's no big event movies yet until No Way Home comes out. No Way Home comes out, and it's like it shatters records. It does all this stuff. Multiverse the hell out of the damn thing. And now we're getting into another big movie, potentially, if they stick to the date in March, for The Batman. I have always championed Robert Pattinson for Batman. I always think that he was what we were just talking about before with Hayden Christensen. People pigeonholed him into one particular role, and he was fantastic in Good Time. He was fantastic in The Rover. He was in all these different movies.
Lighthouse.
But that was, I think, after he got cast as Batman.
And, right.
But beforehand, leading into and showing what he can do, this chop.
I was going to say, wasn't he in some horror movie? But that was Daniel Radcliffe.
Woman in Black.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he is a really fantastic actor. And couple that with Matt Reeves, who slammed down the Apes franchise.
Love Matt Reeves so much.
This is my most highly anticipated movie of the year, for sure. And that's interesting to say, considering there's been so many freaking tellings of Batman, that to still be excited about it, I think, is an achievement of what they showed. It's like Seven meets Batman and what you've seen in the trailers. Are you hyped for this movie? Or are you on the side of the?
Oh no, I'm hype. I'm ready. I think it's time for a new kind of take on Batman. And, it seems like that's what they're doing with this one. But you know, to me, it felt like, I was talking to some friends about this a little bit. Like, the to what it looked, what it looks like to me, because like I don't read much of the Batman comics. Like I read some of the major ones back in the day, but I don't keep up on a lot of the Batman lore, and the movies as of late were kind of like, you know, whatever. Ben Affleck as Batman was like, you know, not my favorite.
No, I didn't mind him. I did you like this? We don't have to get into this full conversation, but did you like the Snyder Cut?
No.
Oh, okay. I loved it.
Yeah. I watched it once. I felt like it was like watching it four times. I feel like there's a world where maybe I'll watch it again someday. But yeah, no, I was pretty confused by most of it, actually. Sure. To me, the marketing of this new Batman movie, it looks like we've got kind of a young Bruce Wayne who's learning how to be Batman, right, and is probably really violent at first and is like learning how to be the like, you know, the stoic stone, you know, world's greatest detective Batman, right, that we know.
Right.
Now, is that kind of what we're getting out of this movie?
What it looks like to me.
That's what it looks like, right?
Because you're trying, and I think they're going to change some of the mythos a little bit, or maybe even a different type of, you never know how many different levels there are in DC of which comics they're going to pull from. But it looks like in this one, and this could just be speculation, that somehow Thomas Wayne is involved in some of this because the Riddler knows more. And in all these clues, he's essentially the John Doe setting this stuff up. And then instead of Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman looking forward, it's Alfred and Bruce Wayne. And Matt Reeves has said that Bruce Wayne and Alfred don't have the relationship that we know normally. Bruce Wayne's kind of pissed off at Alfred in this one.
Whoa. Okay. I'm into that. See, anytime where they kind of switch things up a little bit, I'm always on board. I'm always like, let's see, I'll give it a chance. When you mentioned that we've got like a seven kind of thing going on with this Batman, certainly aesthetically and in a lot of ways, it feels that way, especially with kind of like the Zodiac version of the Riddler they kind of revealed recently and stuff. Yeah. So I'm like really on board with that idea. But I was talking to my friends about this idea, and it was just one of those things where you just go off on a tangent with your friends, kind of like what we're doing right now. Yep. And we were talking about how fucking cool would it be if this movie skip the fucking origin shit, skip the fucking young Batman learning how to be old, the eventual old Batman, and just go straight to world's greatest detective.
I think that's what they're doing.
If that's what they're doing over just like a fucking like moody, young, like I'm not going to follow the rules kind of Batman.
I think it's a mixture of both.
So I want way less of that and this is just me. Like some people might want more of that, or they like the mixture of both, but man, I would fucking love it so hard.
Did you like the Daniel Craig, some of the Daniel Craig Bond movies?
Yeah.
So the reason I bring that up is when you see the first movie, the Casino Royale, it's a very different Bond. It's almost like Bourne Identity Bond.
It totally is.
And then by the time you get to the last movie, he's the Bond that we know.
Yes.
I think that's what they're going to do with this Batman. I think this Batman is going to have a lot of that angst and a lot of that trying to figure it out. And by the time you get to two, they want to do a trilogy. So the time you get to two and three, I think that we get to exactly what you're talking about.
See, because if we start to get like they could just replace the seven script.
Yeah.
Like beat for beat with Batman and with Bruce Wayne and Alfred as the Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt roles, they could just copy it and have Riddler be the fucking, what do they call him? The killer? John Doe. Yeah, John Doe.
Yeah.
And they could just replicate it to a T. It doesn't have to be Deadly Sins. It could be some other thing.
So I think they definitely could do that. But
dude, I
could talk to you for 4 hours, but I don't want to keep you that long. So speaking of Morgan Freeman, before we go here, would you like to hear Morgan Freeman's audition as Mace Windu?
Absolutely. Give it to me, man.
This is Morgan Freeman auditioning for the role of Mace Windu. Right. Out some of the lines and then got mad and didn't realize what it was and then walked off the set. Is this you, sir? I gotta play.
There might be. Yeah. Don't.
I'll try to play.
Let me see if I have. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Yeah. You got that clip?
Yep. All right, here we go. And let me see if I can find it. I'm trying to find it. All right, ready? Here it is.
No, he will not be trained. No, this little bitch here is not ain't no Jedi. No, hold up, shut up, George. This little bitch here ain't no Jedi, muppet headed motherfucker. You ain't gonna learn shit. First of all, you're angry. Second of all, you cry too much. You know, let it go. Okay, your mother was a slave, and you know, she went up to some stuff. Keep rolling. Shut up. My lightsaber's purple, and by the way, which is racist. What is this purple? Everybody else, you know, don't come at me. Don't come at me. I guess that was the clip. He goes. Oh wait, there was more. I think there was more. What do you see now? Oh, a cup, a ship. Do you see my middle finger? How about my boot in your ass? Do you see that? Get out of here. Why don't you put your hand in this box and feel pain? Oh, that's a different movie. Because you read Frank Herbert's Dune and you said, oh, I know. I'll just redo this shit. No, fuck you too.
How great was that?
Dude, that's crazy. Without seeing who's doing it, you're like, that's Morgan Freeman. Just
Flash. Robert Thompson is absolutely he's incredible.
That's so good. What a soundbite, man.
It's really good. It's
what fun. A treat.
Yeah, I know. So look, there's tons of soundbites from this episode, my friend. It was a pleasure to have you. And I also have a friend here.
Do me a favor, please. Get out of here. Get out of here, man. Shit.
All right, we're trying. We're gonna get out of here. So it's time to get out of here. It is the end of the show. And Steve, tell the peeps what where they can find your show, what you've been doing, and how they can go support.
Well, you could just follow me on the socials where I kind of blast what I'm up to at Steve Zaragoza on all the things. I have a couple of podcasts, Dynamic Banter with my comedian friend Mike Falzone, very funny boy. We're kind of bonkers, crazy boys, and we get nerdy. We were born from a podcast called Cloverfields, where we talked about all of the Cloverfield ARG stuff and like the movies and stuff, and we nerded out about it a lot. So from time to time we get nerdy there. And then the Valley Cast is another show that I do weekly with Joe Beretta and Elliot Morgan over there on where you get podcasts and shit. And then, you know, whatever, I kind of just, you know, I'm just doing my thing. I'm kind of, you know, I'm depressed.
Are you?
Oh, right? Yeah.
Is it because of the shit? Because it's gotten back to having to
stick. Yeah, life sucks. It's not the same. And we got to adapt. And, you know, but I'm working through it and things are okay. And I have a real good support system. And, good. You know, obviously things will get better. I know how to handle this. So you don't have to worry about me or anything. But,
well, good. Listen, this is, if you need this, I'm not kidding you. I'm telling you that I tell you this off the air and I'll tell you this on the air. If you need this for a place, you just want to come in here and shoot the shit and it makes you laugh, then come on the show. And
Dude, have me back anytime. Are you kidding me? Not just to help me have fun with a friend, but if you want me to genuinely brain vomit all over you like we just did.
When we're back in studio, you definitely have to come in the studio because I need you to hang out with
oh please
Brett and Steph and everybody too, and it'll be a blast.
Please, I would love it. I'd love to see everybody again. It'd be really nice.
All right, everybody, the great Steve Zaragoza, please go and check him out. It has been a pleasure. And for you guys, once again, here is that stupid graphic. Make sure that you hit subscribe. Do the follow, do all of it, everybody. It is very, very crucial. If you go to the podcast, Spotify, Apple, all of it, that is where we are really moving and grooving, but we need your help. So make sure you check it out. And don't forget about the Patreon. We have two new tiers happening in the Patreon, both Movie Trivia Schmodown, bunch of new offerings over there. And we have tons of stuff now before on the SEN Live Patreon we didn't have before because of both the Big Thing and Sith Council and stuff that we've been doing on this channel. There was never any of the Christian Harloff channel stuff on there. Well, now there is. So the link is in the description for both Patreons. Browse around and see which one is for you. All right, everybody, for myself and Steve Zaragoza, we are happy that you joined us. Leave your comments. I answer back as many as I can. I promise I'm going to keep trying. See you on the next one, The Big Thing.
This week on RVER, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
Oh, that new doctor is drop dead gorgeous. please. He's just another Ivy League educated surgeon with good hair.
No, he's different.
Nurses, we got a Class C motorhome with a detached driver's side mirror. Meet me in the OR. Stat.
Right away, doctor.
No, she's on break. I'll handle this one.
Oh, you conniving little...
When your RV really needs saving, Progressive has you covered. See if you could save with a leader in RV insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Coverage subject to policy terms.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.